Welcome to episode 28 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
We've got quite a big list to work through today. Lots of different topics on my cheat sheet here that we're going to hit as we work through the podcast. Some really exciting things to talk about. And, you know, I think it's been a great week for Star Wars news in many ways. It's just another one of those points in time where it's a great time to be a Star Wars fan. Let's jump straight into it. I want to start off by talking about Season 3 of The Mandalorian. Not great news, what we've been hearing of late, but conflicting news, confusing news almost. We previously heard that Season 3 of The Mandalorian might be screening on Disney Plus by the end of this year, probably concurrently with The Book of Boba Fett, but there's information coming to light just recently that seems to contradict this, and I'm not really sure where to go with it. I'm not going to hang my hat too strongly on any of these, but I do think it's worth talking about because on previous podcasts, we have talked about the fact that Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett would probably be screening simultaneously, and it doesn't look like that's necessarily going to be the case at this point. We know that The Book of Boba Fett has finished filming, so it's moving into the latter stages of production. Ming Na Wen tweeted a day or so ago talking about the wrap gifts that her and other cast and crew had received. On the topic of Mandalorian Season 3, Pedro Pascal recently stated on a web series where he was actually on in conjunction with Ewan McGregor, actually, he stated that he personally hasn't started filming for Season 3. In response to that, Jordan Mason, who is a fairly reliable online source, he writes for StarWars.com, amongst a number of other online pop culture venues, stated that Season 3 of Mandalorian has started filming. But just today, Collider, the online website, reported that Season 3 is slated to start later in the year for a 2022 release, which strongly contradicts earlier information. This sort of information has been spoken of in conjunction with the notion that Season 3 of The Mandalorian might not even be a full season, or that there's going to be sort of additional complexities as to the way we conceptualize Mandalorian and Boba Fett series in general, with, you know, overlap and sort of blurring between the lines, and everything we get about them might not be a full series in its own right. The notion that The Mandalorian hasn't started filming is in some ways believable because some of the LA stages are in fact being used by the Obi-Wan Kenobi production at the moment, so they are occupied in some sense. And Pedro Pascal has been tied up with other work, including the TV adaptation of The Last of Us, which is slated to start production next month. So yeah, as I say, tied up at the moment.
It's always a little hard when productions seem to be delayed. Our fans automatically jump to this is negative news and things like that. But I don't mind when productions are delayed in this sort of stage. I think it stems from wanting to get the right actors booked on the card so it all works. And I mean, actors are such a core of these shows. They want continuous work. So if they need to, you know, push one production out because they're tied up with another one, that's good. We want these people to have successful careers. It may stem from script edits. They may have come up with ideas or want to take storylines in a slightly different direction. And of course, with the pandemic, that's going to introduce different complications that may not be completely foreseen. Maybe they are wanting to adapt the script to work better with some spin-off ideas that they have, particularly with the Book of Boba Fett. Maybe through the course of filming that, they have a fun idea and they want to maybe edit an episode or two to put that more of a link in.
Yeah, I have heard that the Book of Boba Fett should be conceptualized perhaps even a little bit more as a halfway point between Season 2 and Season 3 of The Mandalorian. Some people have even referred to it as The Mandalorian Season 2.5 because of the extent of overlap. And that was my presumption earlier along on that sure, we're pretty certain that Pedro Pascal hasn't started filming yet, but with the extent of overlap that we're anticipating for these two series, it wouldn't have surprised me if some material for The Mandalorian has started to be being filmed while Tim is working on the Book of Boba Fett one way or another. And that might explain some of the inconsistencies in the reports we're getting from different sources.
I also don't mind, really, if, I mean, obviously we want the Mandalorian series as soon as possible, but if the Book of Boba Fett is confirmed to be screening at the end of the year, then pushing the Mandalorian out to early next year means that I almost don't want two series at the same time. Then, I mean, it'll be Star Wars overload and that'll end up being a merchandise overload, but I almost want them spread out so that there's like maybe a gap between them to sort of pause and take a breath so that there isn't these huge big gaps of no Star Wars between the series.
It works in our favor because it gives us continuous Star Wars content to talk about on the podcasts. But yeah, I agree. I like the fact that, you know, it was an exciting concept to maybe have two running in parallel, but I like the concept that we may end up with more points in the year where we have Star Wars accessible than points in the year where there's no Star Wars streaming. So I can live with it as it stands. And having said that, as excited as I am about The Mandalorian Season 3, in some ways I'm actually looking forward to Book of Boba Fett a shade more. I really like the notion Temuera Morrison's involved, obviously, but I also like what they're doing with the character of Boba Fett. I like what they've done with the armor, both in its battle damage, but also in its repainted version. And I think there could be some really strong stories. And I don't really know what to feel about The Mandalorian or in terms of where it's going to go next, because they basically wrapped up and parked the Grogu story arc. So maybe the Book of Boba Fett is actually going to give us something, some sort of tease or establishment of what's going to happen in The Mandalorian next. So at this point, I've got stronger feelings about Boba Fett than Mandalorian, frankly.
Particularly since they know that Boba Fett is such a legendary character, fans are going to have massive expectations for this series. And we kind of have not a lot of history with Boba Fett in the movies. You know, we sort of see a little bit in the prequels, and then there's sort of this gap. So it'll be interesting to see what they really want to sort of bed down as the one true storyline of what happened to Boba Fett, because obviously at this level they can kind of override any of the older books or comics and things like that. And yeah, as you say, it'll be interesting to see where they take the Mandalorian, because the main theme running through was Baby Yoda and all of that, but just at the end we've sort of brought into the concept of other Mandalorian clans and the problem of who gets to wield the Darksaber and sort of be the Mandalore ruler of the clans. And possibly what we might see in the Book of Boba Fett is maybe a little bit more explanation of Mandalorian history, Mandalorian lore, the concept of clans and things. Because if fans haven't watched the Clone Wars, then the Darksaber's significance might not be as apparent. So maybe in the Mandalorian they're going to have to sort of explain it just a little bit. They kind of explained it, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they take it from. It's quite a sort of an open-ended series. Boba Fett kind of connects to more sort of moments in time than The Mandalorian does, so I feel like they're both sort of going to be interesting in terms of the plot for different reasons.
So that's a lot of conversation about Boba Fett and Temuera Morrison, but on a similar topic, there's a bit of a segue to talk briefly about Michelle Ang, who is the other active Kiwi actor in the Star Wars universe just at this point in time. Michelle Ang voices Omega in The Bad Batch, and we've been meaning to do a quick write-up about her role for the SWNZ website for a while. I've just got that out today to go with all the other material we have on New Zealand celebrities, New Zealand actors that play roles in the Star Wars universe. It went out today because the official Star Wars website has an interview with Michelle Ang, which talks about her background, how she got to take on the role of Omega, and, you know, some other conversation points that are worth checking out. We've summarized some of those key points on SWNZ, but take a look at the main StarWars.com article as well. The article gives some insights into her approach to the role and talks specifically quite early on in the article about her Kiwi background and how it relates to Temuera Morrison playing the original Kaminoan created clone trooper, which I thought was a good approach. Nice to see that acknowledged early on. It's also interesting to note that, as far as we can tell, most of Michelle's voice recording work beyond the pilot episode of The Bad Batch has been undertaken while she's back in New Zealand. She's been filming for a few local series, including the Greenstone TV series Vegas that recently debuted locally. So she seems to have been doing that remotely from New Zealand, which is kind of cool.
I'm kind of curious if she is indeed in New Zealand working on film sets. I would love to see her turn up to an Armageddon. I know Armageddon conventions have been able to pull in a few actors that have, for whatever reason, either moved here, are here temporarily, or just sort of an extended holiday while their countries or states or whatever are in lockdown. But it would be fun. I know voice actors have been a huge long-running part of Armageddon's sort of lineup, and I think that would be really neat, considering that Bad Batch is pretty well-loved, and she is a central character to that, and it seems like a perfect opportunity to get an in-person guest for an Armageddon. I know she's probably busy, but maybe Auckland, that would be a really neat treat for New Zealand Star Wars fans.
I think it should be considered by the organisers, and it's entirely plausible. I know that Vegas was filmed in Rotorua predominantly. That's wrapped and released now. So I don't actually know if she's physically in the North Island or South Island, but she certainly has been in the North Island for periods of productions. So yeah, but obviously it's not challenging to move from to travel from the South Island to the North Island for convenience up here as well. So I don't want to jump to conclusions, but yeah, I don't think it's off the cards. I think it's a reasonable odds to wish that we see Michelle Aang at an upcoming Armageddon convention. And if that transpires later in the year, I'll claim to have predicted it at this point.
And on that point, it would be great to see Tim back as well. Obviously, he's been involved in the States with the Book of Boba Fett filming, but he seems pretty loyal to coming back to New Zealand. This is where his base is, his family are here, and he generally stays in New Zealand in between overseas work. So it would be really fun to see him as Boba Fett in New Zealand. That would be quite a treat for fans that may not have been able to see him at some of his, albeit sort of briefer, appearances at Auckland Armageddons and events in the past. It hasn't been quite as strongly sort of Star Wars themed.
No, the last appearance at Tim had it, and Auckland Armageddon wasn't for a Star Wars film. Although, obviously, you could get Star Wars material signed. Hey, but speaking of guests at Armageddon conventions, we've got the Tauranga Armageddon convention coming up this weekend, and we're excited to have a number of Star Wars guests in virtual attendance for that, in particular Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Moff Gideon in The Mandalorian, and Emily Swallow, who plays the Armorer, the Mandalorian Armorer in The Mandalorian, also virtually attending for the sake of virtual signings, which are basically brief teleconferences with the voice talent and picking up of a pre-signed photo. So virtual signing by Carrie Walgren, who has a long list of Star Wars credits. When you break it down, we know her well, or you in particular know her well, as the female Jedi Knight in Star Wars The Old Republic, but she's also done, well, when you break it down, almost all previous Star Wars video games, frankly, Star Wars Squadrons, Jedi Fallen Order. She played the droid PZ-4CO from the sequel movie. She played that droid in Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens. Way back when, she did Kinect Star Wars The Force Unleashed. She played Aayla Secura in The Force Unleashed and Darth Phobos, Empire at War. And even all the way back to 2005, she was in Episode 3 Revenge of the Sith video game. As well as video games, she also did a character that showed up in about 3 episodes of The Clone Wars, a Coruscantian character called Leta Termond. Big long history there for Carrie Walgren.
Obviously, it would be neat to be able to meet these actors in person, but I am excited that there are Star Wars virtual guests on the list for local events. It brings a Star Wars flavor, and of course, these geek conventions attract a lot of fans, and a lot of Star Wars fans go there for the costuming and just the sort of the community with other Star Wars fans, so I enjoy it when there are guests virtual or in person.
Yeah, look, panels, particularly Star Wars panels, totally worth going to. You know, it's fun to wander around and shop and so forth, but to make use of the panels to get off your feet for a little bit. But I don't think I've been to a dud panel at an Armageddon convention, frankly. Even if it's someone you've only seen tangentially or briefly in a series in passing, they always have good stories. Their panelists generally have some background on doing other panels, so they know this, what stories they're going to be telling, and it always works. So I'm really looking forward to hearing Giancarlo and Emily Swallow in particular.
The virtual guest panels at the previous Auckland Armageddon were really great. There were, with the unfortunate technical issues that meant that Ian McDiarmid couldn't attend virtually, all the others were absolutely amazing. They guests like Ashley Eckstein. It was a packed room with lots of fans in costume asking some really thoughtful questions and things like that. So it was great to see just how many Star Wars fans came out to panels like that, just to ask people Zoom call questions.
And I don't want to dwell on negative aspects of it, but it's always, I don't know how to say this exactly, it's sad to look back and realize that a number of the Star Wars guests that came to New Zealand have passed away. So we relish the fact that we were able to to see them on stage prior to their passing. That's obviously a less of a risk with people who are in current productions, but it's not something to be taken lightly. You know, we love the fact that, you know, Jeremy Bullock, David Prowse, Kenny Baker, Peter Mayhew all made their way to New Zealand, you know, once or twice each. And, you know, it's really important to have been able to see those at the points where they were local.
And with many of the large international conventions not being held in recent months and years, it's content that international fans are not really able to get. They don't hold the big, large in-person conventions like we can in New Zealand, so they can't even do virtual convention guests. It's just a real treat to be in this little tiny corner where we can hold events like this, where we can have Star Wars guests answering our questions. And it might be through a computer screen, but it is quite exciting to be able to talk directly to the guests. It is, you do get sort of like a one-on-one feel when you're asking them questions.
Conventions are just starting to dial up and be scheduled in the Northern Hemisphere, but at this point, I think New Zealand still has the upper hand in terms of being able to hold this sort of event. All right, moving on to talk about the Hasbro Pulse I Am Your Father's Day live stream, which took place earlier today, New Zealand time. And we've talked about the Hasbro Pulse live streams previously because the most recent one was May the 4th, and that one kind of was a bit of a fizzer. A lot of people, I mean, I don't want to diss it too severely because there was some fun material revealed, but I don't think it quite met fan expectations. On the other hand, this one that took place today, fantastic. A lot of new material has come out, and I think this one has been far more positively received. So let's take a look at some of the things that we learnt about today. They started the ball rolling by talking about Black Series Rogue One action figures. The entire main crew is being re-released in new packaging, with a couple of additional characters thrown into the mix. Anton Merrick, the Rogue pilot with the blue jumpsuit, and Galen Erso. Those latter two are going to be Target exclusives in the US. At this point, I'm hoping that someone else like Hebe Games may well pick them up locally. But yeah, they've a big focus on Rogue One at this point. I'm going to throw something into the mix. They didn't mention it on that live stream. They missed an opportunity in some ways. Merrick is played by actor Ben Daniels from memory, and it's actually his birthday today, 10th of June, and his action figure has just been revealed.
These are a really great set for Rogue One. They mentioned how a lot of them have new sculpts, or if they have done been released before in the Black Series line, that they have the new sort of photorealistic paint applications, and they have the new style of packaging where with the sort of
angled edge,
colored toned artwork that all joins up. So there's a little bit of each character in the next one, so it all joins up to sort of form a big puzzle, which is great if you are an in-box collector, but it's just a fun little bonus if you're wanting to collect these as a set, whether you take them out or not. The packaging, I quite like this new packaging with the art on the side. I think it's a little more interesting. I know the black and red, very square boxes lined up very nicely on the shelf, but I think this touch of having the art on the side is a little more interesting than the plain red with the numbers. So, and these, they seem to be sort of doing the artwork is good if you want just a focus collection. So
they're actually numbering them in focus collections as well. I talked about Jyn Erso being number one from memory for the set. So they're bundling them as subsets, which is good for focus collecting.
Yeah, so if you're collecting just the Mando figures, they have sort of like an orangey brown tone one. The Rogue One has more of a sort of a blue.
They call it teal or aquamarine.
Yeah, something like that. And so they match, and then I think it's the Rebel Squad are in purple, I think it is.
Yep, there's been a few Return of the Jedi with green stripes.
Yeah. So I think it's nice if you focus on movies, or you collect everything, or you just have a certain favorite group and cluster, then you can get these neat little sort of symmetrical sets with the matching art on the side. So it looks good on your shelf.
So this is an expansion of the Rogue One lineup. So a few of those were re-releases, but they do have the new sort of paint app technology. I particularly noticed that the Felicity Jones Jyn Erso figure had some really good paint apps on her face that worked well for that character sculpt. In terms of other figures that are definitively re-releases, we've got more Black Series 6-inch figures in the 50th anniversary archive line, in particular A New Hope Leia, a Episode 2 Obi-Wan, I want to say, definitely a prequel, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'll have to check that one. A 501st Clone Trooper and Revan. Good opportunity. That original release of Black Series Revan was hard to get.
I think this is a good, strong lineup. Obviously, they've got like classic characters. You can army build the 501st Trooper. Obi-Wan is a classic character. They talked about really wanting to get Princess Leia's likeness to carry in terms of the sculpt and the face paint. And Revan, he's got to be like up there as one of the most sought after figures. Whenever they release a Revan figure, he's sought after. He pops up on the sort of secondary market at hugely inflated prices. So if you weren't able to ninja one from the warehouse back in the day, they would be going for multiple times on Trade Me. So this is a great chance to grab that figure again. And I feel like even when it's the same figure, when they re-release it, it just feels just a little bit better. Like they learn just a little bit better. This one has the same sort of soft goods and the two lightsabers on the neat sort of black backing card with the 50th anniversary. I think it'll be a popular one.
I think I'm excited obviously about, frankly, all of them, but I think I like the 501st Clone Trooper. He just looks the biz. I've gone quite heavily into collecting Clone Trooper variants in the 4-inch line in the past, to the point where I almost got burnt out on it and slowed down a little bit. But out of all the you know, clones and clone variants, this the blue deco on the 501st Clone is, yeah, I really like it. It's got strong significance in terms of the story arc, but that just works well aesthetically as well.
I feel like it was one of the designs of the Episode 3 Troopers that really stood out. They didn't get more or less screen time than some of the other clone variants. We certainly saw some.
It was just memorable.
Yeah, but just that sort of marching scene with Anakin up the Jedi Temple steps, and then the scenes with the Jedi and younglings and Yoda and things like that. It just really stood out, and it's a really good design. Some of the variants feel like they're trying to be different, but this one just felt really classic. And so that's neat to see that they're bringing this one out in the sort of anniversary line.
Sticking with the Black Series 6-inch figures, moving into upcoming figures into down the line, or pipeline figures as Hasbro calls them. We're expecting to see down the line a Jedi Patrol Stormtrooper, a return of the Jedi era Bib Fortuna, a Mayfeld in his trooper disguise from The Mandalorian, Fennec Shand from The Mandalorian, Nomad Boba Fett, so this is his version in his black robes, and Cobb Vanth. Those Mandalorian figures in particular I'm looking forward to. I think it'll be really cool to finally have a Temuera Morrison Mandalorian era action figure in a 6-inch scale. Hopefully presumably we'll see him in one or more variations of Boba Fett down the line. That's pretty much a certainty. I'm quite excited about Cobb Vanth as well, because I thought the way he wore the Boba Fett armor and the detail associated with that was kind of fun, and I think that'll make for a really good figure as well.
I think the Black Series is having the strong Mandalorian series theme running through it, which is great, because I think back to some of the other movies like Han Solo and Rogue One, it felt like we got a burst of collectibles when they came out, and then they just sort of petered out, and we didn't get a full set of all the characters. What we're really seeing with Hasbro now, they're really doubling down and making sure that we get all the variants. And so obviously they're coming in and doing some of the series characters from season 2, but I feel like they are trying to fill in as much of the characters and gaps, because each episode kind of has one or two sort of standout characters. So they're not sort of background characters as much, but they're giving us the full clear lineup of main characters, which is good. Like, obviously they know it's popular. It's probably making them a lot of money. So it's fun to see them actually fill out. And I do appreciate them going back and hitting Rogue One. They said it was 5 years since Rogue One. It's like, woo, where'd the time go? But I do like that they aren't just sort of like ignoring some of the other ones, because Mandalorian is like the topic of the moment.
Yeah, and on that notion, they reiterated, moving on to talk about 4-inch figures just a little bit, they reiterated that the fan vote action figure that's coming up is the Star Wars The Old Republic Trooper in the 3.75-inch scale. So yeah, that really speaks to hitting on a few other franchises beyond just The Mandalorian, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was quite surprised by this fan vote. I'm We are both big Star Wars The Old Republic fans and players. We love the design of the Republic Trooper. He was a little harder to get back in the day, but there were some really strong contenders in this vote. And I was almost kind of surprised to see an older expanded universe video game design winning out over some of the others. I kind of hope that Hasbro will get the nod and look at doing some other action, 4-inch action figures from the video games, the way that Funko has been doing with their Gaming Greats line. Funko recently did a collector set of Revan and Bastila Shan from KOTOR, and that was hugely popular. So I'm hoping...
Well, there's definitely been some 6-inch Gaming Greats action figures. We just got to see... Got to see more. Got to see,
yes,
that. Yes. Got to see that Republic Trooper in 6-inch scale. That'll be fun.
Particularly if you're a Revan fan, it'd be fun to have more of the characters from the original KOTOR game, like Darth Malak, Bastila Shan, Carth Onesi. I would love to see a Black Series HK-51. Like one of those, you know, droid series. There's a few alternate versions, sure, in the games, but, or 40, HK-47, sorry.
47, 51, 55, they're all,
yes,
in there.
Yes, 51 and 55 are from SWTOR, but yes, HK-47 is the original one from KOTOR. And even the little T3M4, the little Astromech, I think it would be fun because there's a very concise group of characters that you play with through that game. And I think it would be fun if they did a full lineup, you know, Zolbar, Mission Veo.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
So that's Star Wars The Old Republic, Republic Trooper coming through in the Vintage Collection at some point down the line. Also coming up in the Vintage Collection, just revealed today, Bo-Katan from The Mandalorian, the Mithril, the bluefish dude, who I don't think he has another name other than the Mithril from The Mandalorian, Queel from The Mandalorian, and not from The Mandalorian, Hoth Rebel Soldier. Following on from those sorts of Mandalorian heavy reveals, we also saw some updates about the Razor Crest HasLab vehicle. So nice to see this in its final form with lots of accessories. They were showing it off in terms of a video of behind the scenes of the promo photo shoot, in which it looked really cool. A couple of things they snuck into that but didn't really mention otherwise. They showed the Queel figure, which they later showed, and which I've just mentioned coming out in the Vintage Collection line, but they also showed an IG-11, which looks like a completely new IG-11 sculpt. So we can expect to see an IG-11 in the Vintage Collection line, and it almost looks like that sculpt for the 3.75-inch range is going to be superior to the Black Series 6-inch range, because they just reused an older, quite a lot older, mold for the 6-inch Black Series IG-11, unfortunately, based on an IG-88 mold. So anyway, just to reiterate that, IG-11 coming to the Vintage Collection, yay.
They also showed Jon Favreau from The Mandalorian holding the HasLab Razor Crest. It was fun to kind of see. They've shown promo photos, but they haven't shown somebody holding it. So it was fun to see him getting to see the behind-the-scenes sort of toy-making process from his series, but also just the scale of a person holding it, I thought was
it
fun.
It looks a lot better when someone's holding it or moving it than just sitting static on a desk. They showed the photographer putting it into place when he was photographing it as well. And that movement of someone holding it as well as giving you the scale shows how the light plays over that really cool metallic surface. And rounding out the Vintage Collection 3.75-inch action figure announcements, we're getting a Return of the Jedi era Bib Fortuna. So Bib Fortuna coming out in both scales there. A Lobot from Empire Strikes Back. It's been a while since we've had a Lobot action figure. In fact, in the grand scheme of things, very little in the way of Lobot material. We randomly picked up a very budget pack of Pop Vinyl figures that included Lobot, a Bespin security guard, and an Ugnaught a little while back. And I was just actually commenting at that point in time that you can count on the fingers of one hand how many Lobot products are out there. Just a side note. So as well as those two action figures, they also mentioned that down the line, don't know what form it will necessarily take, a Navarro Cantina playset. So this is the Cantina from the very early episodes, and they return to it later, of The Mandalorian, where Mando and Greef Karga have conversations about, you know, bounties, and he initially gets sent on his quest to acquire the 50-year-old target that ends up being Baby Yoda.
I'm always a fan of the big plastic playsets. I'm hoping this one is a little more detailed, not just sort of like where there's like, you know, big cardboard chunks of printed material and that they sort of put in boxes sometimes and go, ooh, playset. And it's like, yeah, it's a little bit of a cardboard backdrop, really.
Yeah, well, thinking about the layout of that cantina, it almost has to be something more than just flat walls. almost. We'll see.
I mean, I would always wish that Hasbro would sometimes give us big playsets. Some of my favorites from my sort of prequel collecting days are the big Geonosis Arena and the Mustafar Volcano. The Mustafar Volcano didn't have a lot of play features. It was mostly volcano with like these little sections off to the side where you could pose characters. But I really enjoyed the big sort of volume size of the Geonosis Arena, and I kind of wish that they'd give us a little bit more of that. I know it probably would end up being quite expensive in today's sort of market, but I think the demand for playsets, especially with the huge uptick in action figure photography on social media, people are just out there making their own scenes and backdrops, and you know, whether it's in the grass or the sand, or they are building very, very detailed. I mean, the 3D printing market for sort of backdrop accessories is absolutely taking off. So I'm like, Hasbro should be jumping in on that and just kind of doing it themselves, because they know the demand is there if fans are making it.
Yeah, there's a lot of modular backdrops, diorama components, set dressings in both scales 3, 3.75 and 6-inch scales that are quite fun. We haven't got into it a lot, but it's something I can see actually been quite desirable for display purposes.
The one thing, talking of like backdrops and playsets and things like that, they teased the next HasLab project, which is coming out next. They teased it sort of coming out.
They mentioned that it exists as a concept.
Yes, yes. They sort of announced that they will be doing a sort of, what was it? They basically said it's not a vehicle.
Yeah.
But that was about all it was. I can't remember if they said it was for the Black Series or for the TVC. I get a feeling that they might have said Black Series.
That strikes
But they were being really cryptic about it, so they're just sort of giving people a heads up, like, save your money, we're going to be releasing another big expensive thing. That's about as much, and that it wasn't a vehicle. So is it going to be a playset? Is it going to be a beast? That would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
To see something big in the world of, like, you know, like, honestly, like a Black Series.
They could do a Blurg and Mudhorn 2-pack.
Yeah, yeah. Like, things like that would be fun. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And this, I guess, one of the things that I found really enjoyable about this live stream was that there wasn't any sort of like the kid play things. There weren't any plastic lightsabers. I do enjoy the Black Series helmets.
They did mention the mission fleet, and I didn't bring that up.
Yes, releasing the... Well, I don't know if that's new or whether they were just showing the fact that you could do, like, a big and small version with the Razor Crest.
It's not brand new, because I have in the last few days seen. So what we're talking about here is a Razor Crest in the Mission Fleet. That's the, 2-inch figure scale for the younger audience. But I have seen them talk about the Bad Batch. I don't know if it's a release or a formal announcement. Bad Batch and Razor Crest available in that Mission Fleet scale.
But yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted just the train of thought there.
So they didn't give us any sort of new helmet teasers.
So for once, we're not going to be talking about Black Series helmets in our podcast. We'll give you a break from that for this week. We'll return to talking about Black Series helmets next week.
And no lightsabers. That they have done a couple of runs that we saw things like the Dark Saber, Darth Sidious, Darth Revan, Ahsoka Tano. And I don't know how well those have been selling, to be honest. There has been some criticism that they are slightly big, maybe a little plastic, and they are quite a lot more expensive. Back in the old days, the old Master Replica, and then later on the FX Sabres would retail for around $300, maybe $330 if it was a more detailed hilt. But these Black Series ones from Hasbro are retailing around $500 to $550.
Luckily,
yeah. That's nearly the price of two original Sabres. You could buy the full Darth Maul for almost that amount. And I'd be curious to see how well they're selling in the States as well, particularly with the huge expansion in the market of fan-made metal machined lightsabers that come with the full RGB colors and sounds and flash on clash and all of those bells and whistles. These new ones kind of, they advertise them like they have a lot of bells and whistles, but they're generally not that much different to the original ones. Most of the new generations have two colors rather than just one, but that's not a complicated process that would add on like $200 to the price. So I'm excited to see them push out a live stream that focuses just on action figures that's just for the collectors. It was just Black Series and TVC and the HasLab items, but it was good. I'm excited about basically like 90% of the figures.
We've summed it all up, but if you're interested in seeing all those things and discussed in a little more detail, track it down on the Hasbro Pulse YouTube channel. Okay, we're going to get on to talking about the latest episode, episode 6 of The Bad Batch, very shortly, but I'll just round things out by discussing the local New Zealand store reports that we've covered on the SWNZ website over the past few days. Three things that I just want to talk about, interesting things that have cropped up. The Arcade One Star Wars Virtual Pinball Machine is being stocked at a number of retailers. I believe JB Hi-Fi, EB Games have it, Mighty Ape has it, priced at $1,999, quite expensive. But what these are, Arcade 1-Up make, pretty heavy-duty, pretty robust arcade machines and pinball machines that are slightly underscaled, three-quarter scale generally, so that they fit nicely into your room. They're not quite as imposing with quite as large a footprint. And their pinball machines are virtual pinball machines. They look like a standard pinball machine, apart from being underscaled, but instead of a mechanical play field, they have a large screen monitor. This means you can switch between different play fields, and the backing board is all backlit and has a separate LCD screen for score. So sure, they don't have an actual physical ball, actual physical clinging lights and sound effects, but they do have solenoids for haptic feedback, and I actually think this is quite a fun idea, to put in your rumpus room, your toy room, your collectibles room, or whatever, just as a thing to fill out your collection.
It's like a large scaled up version of the Star Wars Pinball app, in which you can change between different tables. It would be fun if they had the added ability to sort of purchase additional tables. It doesn't look like
it comes with 10 built in, but you can't download anymore. There's no Wi-Fi. I don't think they develop the software for them themselves. I think they develop it. I want to say Zen Studios.
That makes the pinball app.
Yeah. So that's who is doing the actual software. So it's coming from a good pedigree in terms of background, a long history of making pinball software.
And I can kind of see the pluses and minuses. Like, obviously there is that just classic feel of using the pedals and knocking a real ball around the ramps and seeing all that go off. But you are locked into one. And there is a certain maintenance because of the physicality of it, and getting these things maintained can be a little bit pricey. A virtual pinball machine, obviously, there is, with digital technology now, you don't have screen burnout or little pixels going dead at quite the same rate. I think it would be kind of fun because, honestly, the amount of time you would spend per day actually playing a pinball machine, the $2,000 price points, obviously, it's kind of up there like a gaming machine, a gaming PC. So if you're really into pinball and just want sort of a big sort of showstopper piece in your game room, playroom, I think that'd be fun.
So two other things to talk about in the store reports. They both relate to things we talked about last week. We talked about last week the retro comic style pop vinyl Star Wars figures, a set of four that were just announced. They are now available for pre-order in New Zealand from most retailers of Funko products. Mighty Ape has them for $25. Mentioned how much I thought these were very cool last week. We've seen both boxed and loose renders of these. They look really good in their boxes. The box art is unique and distinguishable from the other Funko Pop figures of the Star Wars line as well. So Luke, Darth Vader, Stormtrooper, C-3PO with that cool kind of comic style paint apps, $25 each. And we also talked recently in a podcast about the Bounty Hunter Collection pop vinyl figures. First to come out was Boba Fett, followed by Bosk, and IG-11 has just been revealed and is up for pre-order now at $64. So these are the pop vinyl Bounty Hunter figures that come with the base and the background diorama that links together to make a Star Destroyer playset, diorama. Yeah. Okay, Bad Batch Episode 6, entitled Decommission. Let's have a quick chat about that. In this episode that screened last week, Sid the Trandoshan hired the Bad Batch to retrieve a Separatist tactical droid from the scrapyards on Corellia, where it was going to be decommissioned, hence the title. The Bad Batch go to Corellia, they encounter police droids, but in trying to acquire the tactical droid head and brain and data contained therein, they encounter Trace and Rafa Martez from Season 7 of The Clone Wars. and a little bit of collaboration, a little bit of friction as to who gets to keep the tactical droid head, but also working together just to survive. They managed to get out alive with the tactical droid head. During the events contained in this episode, Wrecker hangs his head, and we see some strong implications that something's going on with his inhibitor chip as a consequence of that. Didn't go into that too long or give too much away, but again, I think everyone can clearly see that that's going to crop up as a story arc down the line. So once they get out of the Carillion salvage yards, the Martez sisters explain they were retrieving the tactical droid head for a client who is fighting the Empire. So on that basis, Hunter gives them a copy of the droid's data to send to whoever's hired them, and we just see who that figure may be briefly, just vague hints that lead to lots of speculation. You see that figure in a hologram form in the closing scenes of that episode. I think we can read a few things from this episode. I think the Martez sisters, I don't think they're working against the Bad Batch just at this point. It may be proven wrong. I get the feeling that if they're working against the Empire, they were passing on information about the Bad Batch as potential allies rather than targets in some other way.
Obviously, there's going to be a lot of speculation as to whether the mysterious figure is Ahsoka Tano.
Sure.
Because these Trace and Rafa are predominantly seen with Ahsoka in those early episodes on Coruscant in Season 7 of The Clone Wars, where Ahsoka is trying to find her way after leaving the Jedi and sort of finds herself in the sort of the under levels of Coruscant. So seeing essentially just a little bit of the back shoulder of the character in hologram, it's hard to tell. We know that whoever is in the hologram that they're talking to might be interested in tracking down clone troopers. We're not immediately aware if that's for good or for not so good purposes, but I get the feeling because they seem quite passionate about trying to fight the Empire. They talk about they knew how dangerous the intel on the droid's sort of chip would be. So I feel like they are quite passionate about fighting against the Empire. So I don't think they would be aligned with anybody that wanted to basically try to hunt down the Bad Batch. But for me personally, Ahsoka would be my best guess, but then also a very obvious guess. But then we might see perhaps a character like Rex or another clone trooper that's perhaps looking for other clones that didn't convert to the Empire. Or it just could be an absolute red herring and it's going to be someone completely different. I mean, who knows? It was a really vague shot and obviously designed to be very, very vague. But it's interesting because we've got basically two different people wanting the tactical information from this droid. We don't know specifically who basically commissioned Sid to find it. So we don't know if that is for good or not so
or
helpful
it may not
reasons.
Even be, it may not even be a strong plot point. It may have just been ancillary to the notion that they had to have this encounter with Trace and Rafa.
I kind of get the feeling that I don't think the Empire would be hiring underground connections, because we kind of get the feeling, because of the way they introduced Sid as knowing Jedi, that she's not exactly against the Empire, but she's not for it. She's kind of in that sort of neutral bounty hunter underground. They just want to be left alone. And obviously she has a taste for credits. You get that feeling in this one that she knows that the Bad Batch are
to see her again and interact with them, providing them mercenary jobs.
Yeah. We know that she has an interesting background, because when Omega is struggling learning her new sort of hollow bow.
Energy bow, I want to call it.
Yeah. That Sid picks it up and fires off three shots very quickly. So she's obviously versed, because that doesn't seem like that would be a common weapon, but she's obviously well versed in weapons and sort of just different tactics.
Yeah. On that
Trandoshans come from a big sort of hunting background, so she obviously has skills. So she could be going out doing these things.
A hunting religion, frankly.
Yes.
But that's a whole other conversation that's kind of interesting that we're quite familiar with from the Old Republic, the whole acquiring kills for the scorekeeper. But yeah, her the revelation of her skills was interesting. I thought it was in general fun to see her again, to see her role continue. Sid is voiced by Rhea Perlman, who is a long-standing actress whose filmography harks all the way back to Cheers with Woody Harrelson and co. So she's a fun addition to the team at this level. The other thing I kind of enjoyed seeing is the very strong solo feel, the solo Star Wars Story movie feel to the rendition of Corellia. I thought that was quite a fun tie-in. It felt very much like a early Empire feel to Corellia.
I almost wondered when they were sort of tasked to go there, and we see sort of hooded figures grabbing the droid head before Bad Batch can secure it. And before we know it's Trace and Rafa, I was almost wondering whether we would see like somebody that works for Proxima from Solo, because it would be in a kind of a similar, it would probably be a little too early to see like Han or Kira. And I don't know that they would necessarily pull major characters in like that, but I was almost like wondering whether it would sort of head in that direction, that it would be sort of the underground scoundrels trying to find things of value to steal to sort of turn in to their sort of, to their leaders. But one little funny little note that I thought was really cute was they finally made a joke about Echo when one of the sisters says, "Is there an Echo in here?" And Echo, yes, I'm Echo.
He didn't just say it, he popped in from out of frame.
It was so funny. Yes. And I thought they finally had the right opportunity to make that joke. And it just made me laugh. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
We do see Omega finally getting a little bit more proficient with her bow.
Yeah, that was an interesting point, because we've talked earlier about what skills she may or may not have as a next-gen clone. We talked about weapons or fighting proficiency, and that doesn't seem to be inherent per se, but obviously she picked it up pretty promptly, so she may have just an ability to pick up skills promptly rather than inherent or early trained fighting skills. We'll see how that pans out.
Yeah. Again, no sort of double thread with seeing what's happening in the Empire. This was an episode solely focused on the Bad Batch and what they're doing. And it'll be interesting to see how much of an offshoot thread we're going to get with the sisters and whoever they're the sort of the person that's commissioned them to get the droid. Obviously, it was mysterious, and they can't just leave us on that cliffhanger. They're going to have to follow it up. But is this going to be like a big chunk of the storyline? Is this going to really involve the Bad Batch, or is it just going to sort of be a little side thing? Because I'm almost missing what's going on in the Empire with Crosshair and the new recruits, and obviously, and then that secret thing of the Kaminoans.
I'm sure that episodes are going to follow a little bit of a pattern and we'll cycle back around. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Crosshair and co tomorrow night, or tonight, Friday night, depending on when you're listening to this.
Depending on how many episodes are going to be in the season, we could be about halfway through.
We are, yeah.
I feel like we're going to have to start, it's really going to start to snowball, and we're going to get faster and sort of more things coming at them from all angles. Like we saw in the Clone Wars Season 7, we sort of got some slower paced ones, setting up a few characters, sort of positioning things, sort of giving a little people a sort of an emotional sort of story arc into the big climactic stuff that happened in the sort of second half. So I get the feeling the same sort of flavor storytelling is happening here. We're getting a few sort of side notes, setting up sort of emotions and connections between the Bad Batch, Omega, and the people that they're associating with before we get flung into a big climactic series of events. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what's coming.
So episode 6 was quite an action-packed episode. I'm, as always, looking forward to seeing the next episode, episode 7, and we'll talk about that in the podcast next week. But on that note, that's about it for today's installment. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and another podcast episode next week. You can catch our podcast wherever you subscribe to your favourite casts. And don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.